South Africans may be excused for believing they were back in the apartheid years as they watched the violence unfolding on university campuses around the country over the past weeks. At the same time, there were warnings that state security and the police will not hesitate to act against protesting students, a refrain very similar to what young people became accustomed to in the 80s. Credit rating agencies has again warned about negative impact of the current political situation in South Africa for our economic outlook this weekend. The ANC leadership met to deliberate on the feedback from its structures about how to self-correct and arrest the decline in its support. Is history repeating itself in the country at a crossroad? We discussed this with Wits Professor Noor Niftahuddin. Professor Noor, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Salam and thank you for the opportunity.
We appreciate you joining us this morning. We also have with us on the program Professor Fani Clark. Professor Fani, good morning to you and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Professor Noor, if we look at the videos and photographs posted on social media, in publications, on televisions, they are a very eerily similar sight to scenes we witnessed in the apartheid years. South Africa's youth has also, over the years, been in the forefront in the fight for change. Is this what we're experiencing now? Your opinion, Professor Noor?
Well, I think that we are certainly at the crossroads, and the conjuncture is kind of characterized by a number of factors. You can take the economy, the state of the national politics, and if one focuses on the situation in education, and I think one needs to remember that the crisis is not confined to the tertiary sector. In fact, some people would argue, I think correctly, that there's a much deeper crisis at the primary and secondary education levels. So the crisis is profound and it's in fact deepened. What the university students have done for many years, but particularly since last year, is to put on the agenda the depth of the crisis. I think it's important to recall that students, particularly at formerly black universities, have been protesting against exclusions and other problems at universities for more than 10 years. But of course, it's come to a head with the Fees Must Fall movement from last year that has continued into this year. So I'd say that at the kind of systemic level, there is a serious crisis. And what the students have done has been to put the extent of the crisis very firmly on the public agenda. And they have made very clear demands. Now, one can have a debate about those demands, but I think that at least the students are indicating what they think is an important way forward to ensure that the exclusion, particularly of poor black students, is halted. I think that the second dimension which you're focusing on, which is about the scenes of violence and so forth, it's really important. For me, one of the most worrying things that has occurred over the past few days is that the language used by the security cluster, in fact, has echoes, not so much of the 1980s, although I think that is there, but has echoes of what occurred in the days before the Marikana massacre. So here you hear language about the criminalization of students, about third forces trying to effect regime change, and also calling on the security forces to use force against protesters, and also to identify so-called agitators in order to deal with them. So I would be very worried if I were at the university, because I think it seems to me from the statements made by the security cluster that they've taken a decision to act very forcefully at universities. And we've seen over the last 2 weeks how the presence, particularly of private security, has created all sorts of problems. At UJ, for example, academics and other bystanders have been attacked by these inept private security, and they resemble more what was known in the 1980s as the Kits Constables. They're inept, they're poorly trained, and they simply use brute force. So I think that we are at a crossroads, but I would imagine that whenever one is at a crossroads, the possibility of finding a way forward is posed very starkly, and everyone in society is called to think very clearly about how one can resolve these problems.
Yes, undoubtedly a very critical time. Now, Professor Fani, we'd like you to come in here in terms of the references that Professor Noor had made. Now, how do you see it, especially in light of the fact that we again see the emergence of the so-called third force, in the sense that government has issued statements to the effect that elements or criminals are behind the violence?
Yes, I agree in general with the assessment by Professor Noor about the reasons for this. We have to start there. It is a systemic problem. It is a problem that has been building up over a number of years because of the underfunding of the education policy in this country, not only at the tertiary level, but also at the basic and higher education levels. And the blame for this obviously must fairly and squarely and firmly be placed on the national government for this development. Over decades, literally, the universities have been constrained in terms of the funding that they get. The government is on record that it has a specific formula according to which it will subsidize higher education. That formula is literally just on paper, and in fact it's not where the paper is written on, because government does not comply with its commitments. It also does not change the policy. It hasn't done so over the past number of years. It just says from year to year that there are insufficient funds. It cannot provide what it had committed to provide, forcing the universities and obviously the students and their parents to make up for those deficits that government has now caused. And this is not very easy to do when you hear the previous year that in fact, your income for the next year is not going to be what was promised. Then it's too late, basically, to start with developing, you know, new sources of revenue. As a result, the universities and the students have been placed under tremendous pressure. And I'm restricting now my comments only to higher education, although we've admitted it is a more systemic problem. And that education generally has been underfunded by government here. So as a result of this, what one can call probably benign neglect by government of that education sector, over time the frustrations, not only amongst students, but also amongst academics and the management of the universities, have been building up. But it's more volatile and emotional, obviously, from the student side, because higher education costs are expensive, and it is not easy, you know, to take the decision to go to a university by parents or by the students themselves, and then find out in the middle of those processes that the promised financial support does not materialize, especially over the last few years, where a special new fund has been established by government called NSFAS, from which the poor students were then supposed to be funded. Now, that's nice. It's a very good initiative. And obviously, it has encouraged a number of parents and students to enter higher education. But similarly, you know, when you get into that system and suddenly you find out government has promised X amount to subsidize you, but the payments are late, firstly. Secondly, the payments are not adequate as promised, landing students in the middle of very tough curricula and academic responsibilities in a situation where they really cannot afford even to complete their current years of study. One therefore must be sympathetic towards the plight in which many of the poor students find themselves in, and this obviously has now spilled over into frustration, into aggressive attitudes, and has led up to now to the unfortunate situation where things have now started to escalate into violent conflict. So it is problematical. On the other hand, we are a democratic country. There is provision in the Constitution for peaceful expression of views. protests and demonstrations are you know, allowed, but obviously within the rules and policies of government of the day, and there's no justification for students breaking these laws. I'm afraid that students are not exempt from normal criminal actions and laws. I have a slightly nuanced difference with Professor Noor on whether to take tough stands on the students. I think it should be done. I think it should be done, however, in a civilized way by people who are trained and experienced to work with students and with violent crowds and emotional crowds. I think the security teams, the private security teams that they've sent in, as well as the police, unfortunately, as we've seen in Marikana, has not been trained sufficiently and effectively for this purpose. And I think this should change.
Yes.
So I fully support stricter activities and stricter enforcement of laws. There is really, from my perspective, no justification for the students to break these laws, because they're not exempt from the laws like any other citizen.
Yes, absolutely. Professor Fani, in your response, focusing a lot with regards to government. Now, we move back to Professor Noor. When we speak about government and looking over the past week since the announcement that universities can decide on fee increases next year, it seemed like a slow burn that exploded. Also, the fact that government seems to have been abdicating responsibility, like, it's not us, that is government who allowed the increase, universities made the decision. So, what are your thoughts on the role of government in this regard, Professor Noor?
So I think it's absolutely right, you know, that what one has witnessed over the last decade and more, and in fact it continues a process that was that started in the 1970s and 1980s, where internationally state support to the tertiary sector, with some important exceptions, has been in decline. And what one has seen is a process where universities depend increasingly on what is called third stream income, meaning from the private sector, from philanthropies and the like, and where that cannot cover the expenses of universities, also to increase student fees. So the key thing really is that it's what you've said. The state has, from a financial point of view, abdicated its responsibility. And therefore, I think one of the key arguments that we need to make, and often people assume this to be self-evident, but I don't think it is self-evident, and that is that education is a public good. Many people would say, you know, university education is a privilege. That's simply wrong. You know, education across the sectors, from primary through to tertiary sector, is a public good and must be defended as a public good. And therefore, the state has the primary responsibility to find the ways to ensure that that public good is protected and expanded, as we have seen. And I think that we must remember that, notwithstanding the criticisms one is making of the state, what one has seen over the last 20 years is a massification of the tertiary sector. But there are all sorts of problems, right? And that massification has been very good. But what academics are saying, and you know, we at Wits University and across the country, academics have been making this point, which is that as the number of students has increased, the state financial contribution to universities has declined. So academics have to teach bigger classes, they've got to do more research, they've got to do administrative work, etc., etc. So the system is creaking. It is at a point where if we continue along this way, then the really good quality tertiary education that we have is in danger of coming apart at the seams, and a number of things will likely happen as a consequence. The quality will decline, and one will see the introduction on a much bigger scale of private universities, which means that the tertiary sector will be in danger. And so for me, the answer is quite simple, although obviously how one implements it is more complex than the answer. The state must take more responsibility. And many people have said over the last many weeks, and in fact at our university, the students have just kind of completed the document which they're going to be presenting to tertiary, in which they make the very cogent argument that it is possible for the state substantially to increase its support to the tertiary education sector, not at the expense of other public goods, such as basic education, health, housing, and so on, but that there is enough money in the fiscus to do that, and more importantly, that one can introduce measures in the fiscus to free up money and direct that money to the things that are of public good, housing, education, and so on. But what one has seen in the last 20 years in particular is that notwithstanding some important expansions in social services, the logic that the government operates with is in fact to undermine state intervention in important sectors of the of society. So I think that the state needs to take more responsibility. And if I could just add this point, because I think that many people have a focus on violence, and this undoubtedly, in my mind, there are some students who are intent on violence. But in my experience, the vast majority of students don't support that. In my experience, what students want are two broad things. One, they want the state, and they've been saying this year after year after year, and that is why there's so much frustration. They're saying, give us a timeline. Tell us that you are committed to free education. Tell us that you are committed to substantially increasing support to the tertiary sector, and tell us how that is going to, how and when this is going to be implemented. That's not been happening. Year after year, the state makes promises, kind of grand statements about, you know, the ANC passes a resolution in support of free education, and then there's no blueprint. So that is one of the reasons why there's such frustration. The second one is that the students, like other sectors of society, believe that they are not being listened to. And we see this in social protests in poor communities. People try, they take petitions to the government day after day after day, and people don't listen. Well, how do you get attention when people don't listen? It's through protest, okay? And in fact, a number of people have done research at different universities, at UJ, at UCT, at Wits, and elsewhere, and it is when universities are securitized, when you have private security on campuses, when you have the police coming on, that is when you have an escalation of violence. That is not to excuse the acts of minorities or students who burn down libraries and so on. I think one can easily agree that those things should be rejected. And the student leadership have said that they reject those acts of violence. For the vast majority of students, the protests have been peaceful. And I think that we need to have a kind of more, more nuanced understanding of what is happening on the different campuses in order to, I think, to have a more productive approach to how to deal with protests.
Professor Fani, should we be concerned about where our country is heading politically and economically?
Well, we do have economic problems. We do have political problems in our country, like most other countries have their own internal problems, contextualized, for their conditions. I'm concerned in some respects in the short to medium term about the lack of strong leadership that we see from government, and not only universities, also sometimes from university leadership, university management. It seems as if in many cases, many of these VCs and their top management teams don't really know how to deal with these issues. Similarly, at the national level and at municipal government level, we see weak leadership in some cases. There are exceptions to the rule. There are some municipalities, some universities, some government are run very well, that are run effectively with strong leadership, but that's not always the case. And especially at top level, we need more strong and committed leadership. We need government to stick to their undertakings and to stick to the promises that they make. We know in the economic sphere, one of the most serious problems is basically uncertainty. If you cannot rely on people's commitments that they make or their utterances, and uncertainty is much worse in many cases from an economic financial perspective than even bad news that you might get. So we need committed leadership, we need sticking to undertakings, and we need effective and efficient governance, and we need cost savings, more cost savings in this country. We need more, less wasteful expenses. And as President Urdu said, there are funds available. It's just a question of reprioritization. It's a question of strong leadership. And then we can get over this. Sometimes only a single individual can in fact change a system if he or she is in a key position in that system, and if he or she is allowed to do what needs to be done. And I think we are at a point in our history at the moment where that is needed. So while I am sometimes pessimistic in the short to medium term, I don't think everything is already lost. I think it can change around, and the sooner the better, obviously.
Gentlemen, we really appreciate your time, the insight that you've shared with us this morning. Thank you very much for joining us on the discussion on Radio Islam.
Yeah, thanks, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day. That was Professor Noor Niftahuddin and Professor Fani Clout of both professors, one at Wits University, the other sharing their insight on the current situation. History repeating itself. Are we at the crossroads? How do you see things ongoing, going? Are we going to have a situation, and that is the question, are we going to have another Marikana? You know, the type of language that we've seen before the Marikana massacre. Are we seeing a similar type of language where government is going to use brutal force and then things will settle down after that? Is that the road? And we don't want that, and we've got to try and avoid that at all costs. 38 minutes past 8 on Sabah.